Live from New York City, it's the Gary Miles Show. And now, your host, Gary Miles.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to have a lot to say about helping you live a longer life, but I'm also setting aside time today for you to call in later on five separate audio clips that I'll be playing on such topics as Seth Godin on how to actually use your free will. Also, that breaking grand jury report that's been released about all those thousand plus, possibly as many as 3,000 or 4,000 raped in Pennsylvania. Also, why hospital prices in the United States make no sense. And also, on Christy Hind, why she doesn't eat meat. And finally, the left thinks blacks are stupid, so says Candace Owens. Was Candace right or wrong? I'll let you decide that and call in and share your points of view. Then I'm going to share with Candace what I hope that she will take with an open mind about what is incorrect on both the left and the right when it comes to understanding how to protect the planet, how to de-ghettoize American cities, how to get the minimum wage up, all the things that real progressives care about, but the corporate left and right don't. Now, she's a very articulate, intelligent spokesperson for the conservatives, but she's also a supporter of the President of the United States, something I am not, and many people in this audience are not. So let's hope that my arguments are strong enough to get her to take her talents and her charisma and walk away from the Republicans as she walked away from the Democrats, but walk into a different arena, the independents, and from there, after she reviews and does her scholarship and her homework, then hopefully she'll become progressive. So all that's on today's agenda. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. From the University of Buffalo, they're telling us that you may have what is called the drunchies. Now, what is the drunchies, D-R-U-N-C-H-I-E-S? That's what happens when people begin to drink. Now, you've seen the ads where people are happy, they're upbeat, they're drinking some alcoholic beverage, and they're eating. And almost always what this article is saying is they're eating salty, fatty, unhealthy foods during and after a night of drinking. And put this in perspective. We are a very overweight society. We have an epidemic of diabetes and pre-diabetes. And researchers decided to look at a sample of college students to better understand how drinking affects what they eat, both at night and in their first meal the next day. And, well, it was no surprise they're not eating kale smoothies and fresh oranges. And, quote, given the obesity epidemic and the rates of alcohol consumption on college campuses, we need to be aware of not only the negative effects of alcohol consumption, but also the impact it has on what people are eating while they're drinking. And this was from the University of Buffalo School of Public Health. This was published in the California Journal of Health Promotion. I had an opportunity to watch a video on narcotics, and it was called Drugs Inc. And it was well done, but there were two separate issues. One is drug dealers taking advantage of college break, both in Panama City and down in Miami Beach and Daytona Beach. And the takeaway message was that the new drug of choice is just a renamed version of ecstasy. And ODing, it showed the fire department getting ready for a night out, and they were nonstop taking care of these kids that were ODing, and it can kill you. And you got the message early on from the college students themselves that they're at a party. They're there to drink and take drugs and have sex and dance. That's what they're there for. but mainly it's drugs and drinking. Now, everywhere, that's what we're told. Then later that evening, I watched two programs with diametrically opposite messages. Kennedy, that is on at the same time at 8 to 9 on Fox, this young woman, I'm guessing, I don't know her age, but she looks like a millennial. She's saying, along with a panel, that instead of having prisons that are not helping people who have got drug problems, shouldn't there be clinics? And I agree with that. On the other channel was Tucker Carlson, and he had on a Republican legislator who's enacting even more draconian, harsh penalties for drug dealers. What neither are asking, though Tucker on this was completely regressive politically and morally and ideologically, is this question. Why are so many people using drugs to begin with? Why are people using antidepressants and antipsychotic medication instead of dealing with the issues of life in a proper way with some humanistic, non-judgmental communication? Why? And why is it that the vast majority of heroin sold in the world is sold in the United States? Why? We're not even asking these questions. We're not asking questions such as, why do about 22 GIs put a gun in their mouth generally and kill themselves each day in the United States? The numbers are staggering. Now, just do the math for a moment, because it can get out of perspective, because it's every single day, so it's cumulative. So let's just say that you have 22. Some go as high as 24 in a day. The 22 a day times 365 days, that comes up to 8,030 in a year. Now, this has been going on, and we're not even going back. Let's just go back 17 years, and you're at 300. Well, no, if you did 30, let me just do this. If it were 22 a day times 365 days, that's 8,000 times 17 years, you're at 136,500 American GIs have killed themselves. Well, that places the Americans killing themselves by their own hand at levels that are double the Vietnam War. I mean, you're right up there then. Why not a single thing being done about it? Nothing, including not even questioning if the drugs that they're given when they're in battle combat areas, war zones, or when they come home and they're talking about nightmares and they can't handle it, and they're given these antipsychotic medications, and the antipsychotic medications have as a side effect suicide. No one's talking about it. So no one's talking about why we do drugs and what would be a healthier way of helping people who have a need. And then this whole phenomena that there is an intemperance bordering on a repulsion from younger people towards older people when it comes to taking advice. And I think this, just one tiny example of this, is bullying, is people sharing porn when they're 10 and 12 years old, when you have a breakdown in any form of inner family discipline, where anybody can do anything they want at any time and tell everyone else not to bother them, just pay the bills, give them money and feed them. So then the point of what a person's eating when they're drinking is really foolish. And that's the kind of wasted academic mindset, because if a person's already drinking, then what is the likelihood they're going to care about their health or care about the consequences or care about their food? So you could tell every person that drinks you shouldn't be eating all this salty, fatty, unhealthy food. And they're going to say, dude, that's my choice, not yours. Stay out of my life. Stay out of my business. So it's just, to me, it's the issue. We're not looking at what's really important. And as a result, we have a lot of very stupid people who are going to be taking their place within society, who are completely unprepared to be responsible, to think deeply, to do any scholarship, that have any empathy, that have an understanding of the interrelationship of all things and all people. We're just about as dumb as we could get as human beings right now, for the majority. And that's unfortunate, because that's intentional. It's not by neglect or by accident. From the Natural Blaze, they had an interesting article about Saul Palmetto. That's S-A-W-P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O. For women. Now, this is good because this low-growing palm tree is typically used as an herbal treatment for men with enlarged prostates, and it does work. But what about for women? Well, women, here's one reason you should be also taking Saul Palmetto, because it treats bladder disorders. That's according to the Natural Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Women who experience bladder disorders, such as urinary tract infections, you should be taking this. Then it also blocks the overproduction of testosterone. It helps reverse a condition of usually facial growth of hair, and excess body hair on your back and around your body, and particularly in women. Now, that's normally caused by an overabundance of hormones in the body. Well, Saul Palmetto has the ability to block the overproduction of testosterone in the female body, also treating hair loss. Now, we know what is called dihydro, D-I-hydro, H-Y-D-R-O, testosterone. And for short, it's called DHT, and it's derived from the male hormone testosterone. It's also the primary cause of hair loss in men and women. So when DHT builds up in the hair follicle, it causes a gradual thinning of the hair shaft. And depending upon one's tolerance to this hormone, its effects can include minimal hair loss or hair thinning or balding. And research has shown that Saul Palmetto can block the 5-alpha reductase, an enzyme that converts testosterone to DHT. Also, it helps treat acne. The same DHT hormone that leads to hair loss also has the ability to cause an excess of sebum in the skin. And the increased production of oil on the skin increases the chances of clogging your pores. And that leads to blackheads and acne. And it can block 5-alpha reductase. It also treats menopausal symptoms. Why? Because during menopause, estrogen and progesterone levels drop, and while the testosterone levels remain steady. Well, Saul Palmetto helps prevent weakening of the vaginal and uterine tissues, which is, by the way, nothing is ever talked about this, but it's for women, it's a very uncomfortable side effect of menopausal experience. A lot of women's vaginal tissue dries out. And even with a lubricant, the tissue has thinned, and therefore chafing and ripping, sores and bleeding, and hence excruciatingly painful intercourse is the experience. However, about 14 years ago, I did a menopausal study group with a group of menopausal women for 1 year, and at the end of a year, following very strict protocols that they had been given, they reversed every single symptom of menopause by over 95%, including getting their hair back, their natural hair back, natural color. Their face started to change to a younger face because collagen was reconnecting and being manufactured. Their muscle mass came back instead of having that kind of flabby arms and upper back and legs. They got muscular again. But I got so many reports that women said that now, and one woman in particular, I remember she came up to me and she said, "I just want to tell you privately that my husband and I have not been able to be intimate in that way for about 6 years. And she said, "Now we have no problem at all." And she said, "That has made all the difference in the world." And also, Saul Palmetto reduced the effects of polycystic ovarian syndrome. And this is an endocrine system condition that affects a woman's hormones, and it causes excess facial and body hair and trouble losing unwanted weight and irregular menstruation and infertility. And testosterone imbalance is associated with this condition, so Saul Palmetto can help reduce the effects of these symptoms, mainly because of its hormonal effects. So And the only side effects that I'm aware of are sometimes stomach pain and nausea and diarrhea, maybe some heartburn and indigestions. And that's why you should always take it with food, not just straight. All right? And always consult your doctor before introducing salt palmetto into your diet, just so that you can realize there's no side effects. It's generally taken around 200 milligrams a day, which is important. Now also, two sodas a day raises the cancer risk, according to a study from the Karolinska Institute. And so that's one more reason to consider cutting back on the soda. Drinking too many sugary drinks on a daily basis has been linked to gallbladder cancer. So Swedish researchers studied the eating and drinking habits of more than 70,000 adults, and they kept an eye out for a cancer diagnosis, and they found that people who downed two or more sodas a day doubled the risk of developing gallbladder tumors compared to those who abstained from the sweetened drinks. This was published in a journal of the National Cancer Institute. I'm looking at the clock, and that brings us up to our health nutrition segment end. We have a lot to share today, and I'm going to ask you to call in later with any input that you have. I'd like to hear your thoughts. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to go right to Seth Godin's How to Actually Use Your Free Will. I think you'll find it interesting. And then after that, if you'd like to call and give your points of view, our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
The story of Icarus is fascinating to look at from a cultural perspective. It's been around for thousands of years. We all know it. Daedalus and Icarus go to a desert island. Daedalus, the dad, makes wings out of feathers, gives them to his son, puts them on with wax, says to his son, obey your father, we're flying out of here. Don't fly too high, because if you fly too high, the wax will melt and you'll die. And we all know what happened. Icarus got uppity, he had hubris, he disobeyed his father, and he died. Except that's not what the myth said in 1700 or 1500 or 1200. They changed it. It used to say, but more important, don't fly too low. Because if you fly too low, the water and the mist will weigh down your wings and you will surely perish. They took that part out.
Why do you think they took that out?
They took it out because the people in power, the industrialists, want us to fly lower. Because it's easier to ignore us, it's easier to keep us in line, it's easier to get a factory job that way. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but I do know where public school came from. And public school was invented by factory owners who didn't have enough compliant factory workers. And it worked great. For 100 years, we had this wonderful system. Do what you're told, go to the placement office, you'll get a job for 50 years, you'll like the job, but you'll be able to go home and watch TV, buy enough stuff, you'll need a storage unit, and then you'll die. And the problem is that people are still seduced into thinking that what they're supposed to do is fit in more. And social media has made it worse because there's this whole pack mentality of how do I fit in more with small bursts of here's one quick tip for a flat stomach and three different ways to get rich and you can learn to flip houses today and be a millionaire tomorrow. None of which work, right? But the combination of those two mean that people are starting to feel broken and bitter because the promise isn't being kept. But what I can tell you is it's mostly triggered by fear, our fear of death, our fear of being alone, our fear of failure. So we invent all these narratives to protect ourselves from the thing that's going to happen to us one day anyway. You know, there's a really good reason to be afraid. And if you look at a lizard or a wolf or a fox, they spend most of their time afraid. That's why they're alive. That what makes a wild animal is that they're good at having grandchildren, staying alive in the wild. Well, we evolved from that And it worked when we were cavemen or in the jungle, because if you hear a twig snap and you don't run away, that's it. It's over. If you're in the circle in the village around the campfire and you offend the chief and they banish you from the tribe, you're going to die. And so there's a lot of things that evolved for a really good reason about how we behave. And now they're all wrong. That the thing that you're trying to avoid with saber-toothed tigers or the campfire, the opposite is true. If you want to do public speaking, make a presentation, do sales, invent something new, the harder we make it go away, the more powerful it becomes, because it's at our brainstem, our amygdala. It's very powerful. So the alternative is say, oh, welcome back. Thanks for letting me know I'm onto something. And that narrative is something that we can learn to do. And we can do it with fear, not without fear, but do it with fear. Because over time, it's like athletics. We can train ourselves to get better at it. And what we find is that as a parent, as a clerk at 7-Eleven, as a third grade teacher, we could dig deep into emotional labor, not the physical labor of digging a latrine, but the emotional labor of sitting when we feel like running, of whispering when we feel like yelling. We could dig deep and say, in this moment, I'm going to choose to be the best version of myself and seek possibility. And then what happens, more often than not, is the world responds by inviting you to play on a bigger stage. And it turns out that that's a life, that you can build an entire life merely doing that. And so there's an enormous amount to be said for accepting the fact that you're going to die, accepting the fact that it's all going to go away. What are you going to do in the meantime? People who have the hubris to dream of something bigger change the status quo.
I would add a few thoughts onto that, and I'd like to see if you have anything to suggest that. I believe that's an oversimplification. Again, I don't always play things that I agree with. I play things frequently that I believe we should think about and see what how our own individual minds are analyzing something. For example, most people today will not change because of their conditioning. They're conditioned to comfort. So the highest goal that most people can achieve is the security of comfort. You got a house, you got a family, you got a job, you got food. So why risk any of that for a better job? But what if the job you're working at is in the coal mines and you're going to get black lung? You don't care about it because that every week that you're working, irrespective of what's happening to your body, you got food on the table. What does that do then to the children seeing you suffer and sacrifice so that they can be taken care of? That creates a guilt and a shame in them, or it creates an indifference. Each one will process it differently. And so we're not getting the job that honors our uniqueness. We're not doing the exercise that keeps us strong and healthy. But almost everyone masters something in their life. And we make the mistake of conflating two issues. Are you good at something? Most people are. Most people are very good at something until they're not. But does that mean they're a good person or that they're good to themselves? The answer is the vast majority of times it's not. I can show you doctors that have outstanding reputations who do good work with their patients. Now ask them when was the last time they spent absolutely quality time with their sons, daughters, spouses, or themselves, just disconnected and relaxed. It's almost never the case. So you can be a good doctor, a great doctor, a good musician. Think how many musicians will go on stage and it give a wonderful performance. And we say, wow, that was terrific. And then they go off stage and suddenly they're taking a drug, shooting heroin, or they get some groupies having some sex and passing around diseases. And all the stupid things that someone who has power without maturity has. And that's most people today. Most people who become successful today have not evolved as a human being. They've evolved and mastered a skill, a talent. That's not who you are. That's merely one of the multiple accomplishments and stages of life you should go through. Instead of looking at the success you have as an opportunity to grow, people look at the success they have as who they are now. It's kind of interesting because over the last 30 years, at least, two very famous African-Americans, who I won't mention because they're alive, came to me and asked, would I help some African-American performers and some very famous ones? And I said, sure. And I said, but my being able to help them is not the issue. Are they willing to help themselves by making the sacrifices that they would make if they were in the ring like Muhammad Ali, but out of the ring was completely undisciplined, where they would make in when they're singing and they've mastered their voice and performance and projection, but eat themselves into obesity and then from that disease. Are they willing to master that? And the answer every single time was no. Well, then how can I help someone? So you see, what he was not also stating was that at some point in our lives, you can no longer blame your background. You just can't. And you shouldn't. You can't keep making yourself out to be a victim. And there are people who are professional victims. You cannot have a conversation without them getting around to everything that's wrong, but they never change it. They can't take that merit badge off. And it's always something that prevents them from being a happy, healthy, full human being. Because then you wouldn't fear death, as he suggests. You wouldn't be coming from fear. If you're only motivated to change because of fear, you will never sustain the change. That's why one of the things I do in helping people is helping overcome the fear, overcome the anger that frequently is the boundary of fear. Because if you're a happy person, you're far more likely to stay healthy than a person that is not and coming from fear of loss, which means you're going to make very few changes and they're going to be really minimal changes. You gotta be open to making mistakes and laughing about it, learning from it, and not personalizing your mistakes. We all make them. But show me someone who grows and matures without making mistakes. Shouldn't fear that. And you should also not be concerned about your comfort, because comfort is one of the biggest addictions we have. That said, I want to now go to why hospital prices in the United States are so expensive, why they make no sense. And then I'll share some thoughts. But again, you have a number you can call and share your thoughts. I'd like to hear them. Now to this clip.
No matter how you slice it, American healthcare is painfully expensive. If you're lucky enough to have some extra cash and great healthcare coverage, good for you. But if you have minimal insurance or no coverage at all, your debt can go from zero to astronomical in a heartbeat. Regardless of your personal situation, don't be fooled by the siren cry of America has the best healthcare in the world, because that's not necessarily the news. Here's a brief look at how healthcare really works in the U.S. and the reasons why even a minor trip to the hospital is so damn expensive. The United States annually spends more money per person on healthcare than any other developed nation in the world. But it doesn't need to be that way, because Americans are actually going to the doctor less often than people in other countries, which isn't much of a surprise given that American hospitals have been overcharging patients in ludicrous amounts. Not only that, the prices from hospital to hospital and doctor to doctor are so wildly varied, it's hard to believe that an inflation of this magnitude is even legal. Aside from a few very specific examples, the highest prices for medical treatments are found in the United States. But it didn't always used to be this way. There was a time when American healthcare was relatively affordable, but the rise of big insurance companies completely changed everything. And it only takes one glance at a list of hospital service costs to shine some harsh fluorescent lighting on that fact.
What if we made rectal exams $69? Nah, that's too silly even for me.
You see, every hospital has its own charge master, a comprehensive list of prices for everything from services and drugs to tests and supplies that determines the bill for both insurance companies and individuals. Hospitals used to determine prices by taking healthcare costs into account and figuring out how profits could be funneled back into their facilities. But over the years, hospitals began raising prices to maintain those profits while also negotiating discounts with private health insurance companies. And so, the prices have continued to skyrocket. There is really no justification for it, and hospitals often try to make up for their losses by charging full price to patients who have no health coverage. Because each hospital has their own individual charge master, what might cost only $7,000 at one facility could cost $100,000 at another. No, seriously. That's a real comparison. If a patient goes to the Bayonne Hospital Center in New Jersey to receive treatment for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, they can expect to be slapped with a bill of about $99,690. But less than 30 miles away at the Lincoln Medical and Mental Health Center in the Bronx, the same exact treatment only costs $7,044. As former health insurance company executive Robert Lazuski once told the Huffington Post, over the years, the charge masters have become more and more disconnected from reality. And even if you're covered, you could still feel the burn when you pay your premium each month, because insurance companies also have to find ways to profit from this convoluted system. Are you asking yourself how this is allowed to happen in America? Because the answer is simple: political lobbying. The healthcare lobby in the U.S. spends more than the oil and defense lobbies combined. While the lobbies are obviously trying to make as much money as possible for U.S. insurance companies, many other countries have agencies that negotiate lower prices with hospitals and drug companies. The U.S. has no such agency. Every single insurance plan...
Okay, now I'll share a few of my thoughts, and if you'd like to call in, you can share yours. Everyone who wants universal health care are using the wrong figures and therefore artificially inflating through the Koch brothers' figures that it would cost about $33 to $36 trillion over the next 10 years if we had universal health care. That would be true only if we took left the profits in the system. But if you took the profits out of the system, for example, you wouldn't need the insurance companies at all. That saves one-third of all the money that we spend, over $1 trillion a year. And then you took away defensive medicine, where you go into a doctor, they don't want to be sued, so they give you way more tests than what you require. Then you take away the malpractice insurance, having universal no-fault medical insurance. Then you give each doctor a good living wage. Let's say, what would a doctor normally make after 5 years? Let's say it's $300,000. Then you start every doctor at $300,000. And that way, if they have no expenses because you already paid for all their medical training, internship, and residency, so they're not going in having to make a lot of money to pay off a $1 million bill. So if you took away the profit out of the whole system with the drugs, you could save $1,725,000,000,000 a year. It would be completely self-funded, so there'd be no new taxes, no deficit, and we would actually save money, a huge amount of money, at the end of 10 years. Now, these are actual figures I'm sharing with you. So the profit motive is what causes all these ridiculous prices. Now, one more before we take a break. I'm going to play you this. This is from Candace Owens. Now, this can cause a lot of reactions in people. And you're not going to hear her on any programs, liberal programs or the left, unless it's to challenge her and argue with her. And she's called a lot of names and she's attacked. But listen up. She actually is the voice for an awful lot of African Americans and a lot of the people in the walkaway movements. And because she was a liberal, and then she went. But instead of going from liberal to independent, she went from liberal to Republican. In my opinion, a big mistake. I don't believe that any Republican or conservative should go over to the liberal side, nor liberal to that. They're both manifesting the same. So before we start, this is a message for Candace Owens. Candace, the independent movement could benefit from a highly articulate, intelligent person who does her homework and has not given talking points, but rather is coming with a mandate, and all you have to do is, we've done the homework, and you can verify it. For example, on at least these issues, and the millennials are supporting this, who would make a better candidate? I compared Trump's record and Clinton's record and statements with Bernie Sanders. On the repeal of the worst labor law, the Taft-Hartley, which intrudes on freedom of speech, Clinton and Trump says no. Sanders says yes, he was right. On halting nuclear energy, Trump supports nuclear energy, Clinton supports nuclear energy, Bernie Sanders does not. On reducing hydrofracking, which is destroying the water and soil, Clinton and Trump both said, no, don't reduce hydrofracking. We're getting money from these people. Bernie Sanders says, yes, on continuing to give billions of dollars to the fossil fuel industries as subsidies, meaning socialize their losses where they privatize their profits. And again, Trump and Clinton both said, yes, continue that gravy train. Bernie Sanders says, no, don't. Now, it was Obama who used the term clean coal. You talk about an oxymoron. And so is there such a thing as clean coal? Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump says, yes, there is none. Bernie Sanders says, no. On a carbon tax, Sanders says, yes. Clinton Trump said, no. On taxing speculative trading, Sanders says, yes, tax them. Clinton and Trump, no. On a moratorium on genetically modified foods, meaning stop them, Sanders says yes. Clinton and Trump said no. On repealing the DARK Act, Sanders says yes. Clinton and Trump said no. On a national minimum wage of at least $15 an hour, Sanders says yes. And Clinton and Trump said no. On repealing the Glass-Steagall Act, Sanders says yes. Clinton and Trump said no. On repealing Citizens United, one of the most egregious pieces of legislation, Sanders says yes, repeal it. Trump said no, and Clinton equivocated. Reforming NAFTA and GATT, yes, Sanders, no to Clinton and Trump. And forgiving student debt, $1.5 trillion forgiven. After all, we forgave trillions of dollars in Wall Street's gambling and bad debts, we the people did, and they didn't give us any forgiveness. Well, $1.5 trillion could be written off because most of that is owed to the government, so it could forgive that. Sanders says, yeah, forgive the student debt. Let them start without debt peonage. Clinton and Trump, no. And so in helping whistleblowers be able to tell the truth without being in prison, Sanders says yes. Clinton and Trump says no. Legalizing marijuana, yes to Sanders, no to Clinton and Trump. On universal health care, what I just talked about, Sanders says yes. Clinton and Trump, no. On breaking up the big banks, Sanders says yes. Clinton and Trump says no. So, and repealing the Patriot Act, Sanders says yes, Clinton and Trump says no. So I'm only giving you some of the issues that they hold that are important. Younger people see this. If they were to be able to get it out of this massive debt peonage they have, if they were able to work where they could at least earn enough to pay for rent and food. So if you're looking from a ideological point of view, then you're going to have to embrace this whole philosophy that you've been sharing, that if you made it, everyone can make it. It's not true. It's simply not true. Because for everyone who is able to make it to a better life, I'll show you a lot of people who tried, who are working two jobs and are not able to make it. From my perspective, I believe that the current Republican mandate is anti-humanistic. It denies global warming. It denies challenging Israel and its apartheid positions. It denies challenging Saudi Arabia because there's profit to be made. If you align with the free market system, then all those great talents you have will be wasted. Just my thoughts, something to think about. What you will not hear on this program is me attacking you personally, because I feel that it is unprofessional and is unbecoming if we want to bring people to a more, what we consider, a more honest perspective, so they can see what can benefit people. Now, I'm going to play you a clip from Candace Owens, and then you can have a chance, after you hear what she has to say, to call in and offer your point of view.
Today we are counting down three times the left made an absolute and utter mockery of black people right to our faces. My name is Candace Owens, and you are watching The Left Thinks Blacks Are Stupid. Let's take it from the top. Number three was brought to us by a woman who knows absolutely no boundaries when it comes to making me cringe. That's right. Hillary Clinton claims she keeps hot sauce in her bag.
What's something that you always carry with you?
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce.
Really?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Listen, I want you to know, people are going to see this and say, okay, she's pandering to black people.
Okay. Is it working?
She doesn't even care if we know that she thinks we're stupid. Like, she doesn't even care.
No, seriously. Hot sauce. I've been eating a lot of hot sauce.
Hot sauce. Yeah. I just want to sit in on a DNC strategy session. Okay, here's how we get the Latina vote. Empanadas. I'll say that I love empanadas. I buy Londo to Enrique Iglesias. Okay, here's how we're going to get the Irish vote. Potatoes! So insulting and easy to see why number two on our countdown is when Hillary Clinton pretends to be a Jay-Z fan.
Without further ado, I would like to introduce to you the next president of the United States, Hillary Clinton.
Without further ado, I would like to introduce to you how stupid the left thinks we are.
Oh my God, it's Jay-Z and Beyonce. I always do whatever they say. I can guarantee you that Hillary Clinton cannot even name two Jay-Z albums. And yet, just a few days before the election, while Donald Trump was out on the ground speaking to real people, she opted to throw a Jay-Z and Beyonce concert. In case you don't speak liberal, allow me to interpret that action for you. Hi, black people. I know your communities are suffering, but you are too stupid for me to waste my time speaking to you about that. So instead, I'm gonna throw you a Jay-Z and Beyonce concert. You guys like hip-hop, right? So insulting, it actually pisses me off. She doesn't even think she needs to speak to us about what is happening in our community and how she is going to fix it. If you guys watched that concert and thought, oh my God, Queen Bey and Jay are hashtag with her, then congratulations, because you are considered an easy target by the left. Back when I used to babysit, the three-year-old that I watched was obsessed with Barbies. Whenever I wanted her to do something, I would tell her that Barbie thought it was cool. Barbie thinks cleaning your room is cool. That is literally the strategy that the left uses on black people. Jay-Z and Beyonce think it's cool. Last but not least, number one on this countdown is, drumroll please, Mr. Change himself, Barack Obama. Yes! A black president! Now I can die a happy death. This means progress because his skin is black, like mine. I'm not gonna lie, I was fooled first too back in 08 when Obama first came around. Just seeing somebody that looked like me made me buy into the illusion that perhaps this country was headed in the right direction. And then I woke up and I will never, repeat, never ever be fooled by the color of someone's skin again. Just because you are a woman does not mean that your primary concerns are for women. Just because you are a black man does not mean that your primary concerns are for black men. Lessons learned the hard way, anybody? I want to be very clear on the takeaway here. The left thinks black people are stupid. They rely on our interests, hip-hop, culture, music, hot sauce, apparently, to distract us from the truth, which is that we are, in fact, ignorant. We are ignorant because we do not know our own history. We are ignorant because the left controls the academia, the media, and Hollywood. Cue Jay and Bey. And they have purposefully thrown off our sense that we would never discover the source of our own pain and misery. Slavery, segregation, welfare, you name it. It has and always will be orchestrated by the left. Thank you guys so much
okay.
for watching.
Now that's Candace Owen, very incendiary. Very provocative. Your thoughts on how you would respond to her. And then I have a list of progressive ideals that neither the left nor the right, what she supports on the right, are dealing with. And therefore, she is now protecting the interests of the president and the Republicans and the conservative movement. And that is something that I will try to share a difference of opinion with her on. Your time to talk back, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. So you have a chance to talk back to Candace Owens. We're going to send her this clip today, too. Let's say hello to Max from New York City. Hi, Max. Your thoughts?
Hi, Gary. So on what Candace is saying, I think the main issue is that within the African-American community, there's been a considerable amount of feeling of betrayal in the system. I know within my family, in my wife's family, they were longtime Muslims, longtime progressives. My father-in-law was a bodyguard for Elijah Muhammad. One of his daughters voted last time for Donald Trump. And I think she probably regrets it now. But people feel betrayed by the system. And the core of the problem is a lacking of human respect of human dignity on both sides. Both on the right and on the left, both sides have betrayed the very essence of what it means to be a human being. And so people wake up and they react one way or the other, but it doesn't address the fact that we are all one. And so I think what Candace is trying to do is to make people aware that they should think outside of the box, but she's still staying within one box that is very reactionary and divisive. And so I think that that is the same problem that comes with what I meant to talk to you about, which is about the healthcare system. And the main problem with what we're going through with the healthcare system, and I've worked in healthcare now for 13 or 14 years, everywhere from the VA to Montefiore to Cornell, which is the biggest place in New York. The reason that the medical system is failing is because it doesn't recognize people as divinely gifted beings that deserve to be respected. And it only sees them as chicken feed that they can siphon money out of. And we've stopped seeing people as being worthy of being cared for and honored. And so they no longer trust the medical system, which leads to defensive spending and how we do medical care. And the sad thing is that healing people, getting people well, as I've seen in Texas when I've gone down to your retreats, is much cheaper than what we do in hospitals and much cheaper, God help us, than what we do in nursing homes. And it really comes down to just doing what's right by people. And this system is built with so many levels of mid-management that just siphon profit out of it where it can't exist. And it's inevitable that we need a single-payer system that no longer seeks to make profit out of people, but just lets someone like me come and see patients and see them for a standard cost over the course of a year and not expect that every patient I have to see is a eat what you kill model where we're just trying to make money and in a system where we will be fired unless we try to work within a deceptive model and a predatory model. And that's the core of the thing between what Candace says and the problem in the medical system is that it's not built to respect human dignity.
Max, you've made some extremely articulate points. I'm going to speak out now to Candace Owens. And for all the other people who may be listening, including a lot of conservative millennials, no one is suggesting that having conservative values or liberal values in and of itself is wrong. We are a combination of all these different values. It's the corporate value, the commodification value, the politicalization value, the type of value that separates people artificially to exploit them. That is what the problem is, and the corporate structure that she is now a cheerleader for is extraordinarily destructive. For example, Candace, please look at these and ask yourself, what has the president and the Republican administrators and the conservative media done on reinstating the Glass-Steagall Act to separate savings and loans from banking? They haven't. On banning commodities essential to life like water and food, and also the... You should oppose the privatization of water, yet privatization of water so that people cannot even afford to buy the water is going on, and your president supports that. Stopping the Federal Reserve from giving any more no-interest loans to banks and corporations, yet not giving us a break. Your president supports that, and that's bad. Declaring a moratorium on home foreclosures. Barack Obama could have. He didn't. And George Bush could have. He didn't. And Donald Trump could have. He didn't. So they're all wrong. That's why I say it's left and right together. And also review the bankruptcy laws instituted by George Bush, particularly concerning college loans. Forgiving college loans. None of them want to do it because the bankers and the people that would have to sacrifice some profit are the ones there. Also, why doesn't your president and the Republicans want to create a national food program to see the 16 million hungry children in the United States are fed? How about de-ghettoizing America's program of food distribution and bypassing corporations and working directly with communities? How about creating a program of reforestation, a Marshall Plan to rebuild our forests and fight climate change, and hiring people who otherwise would not be hired and giving them $15 an hour so they could work at doing something both helping themselves and their families but also helping protect the planet? And how about protecting public lands from private interest? A moratorium on private exploitation of natural resources like our fossil fuels in our parks and mining and lumber. How about a Marshall Plan for employing skilled and unskilled labor to improve our infrastructure like bridges and highways and levees and water utilities and waterways? President Trump is only going to do it if he has a public-private partnership with equity partnership and hedge funds that don't know a damn thing about building anything except building a profit for themselves. How about supporting senior citizens with free community hospital service and food co-ops so they can eat? How about closing and decommissioning all the nuclear power plants and shifting that investment over to geothermal and solar and wind energy? And banning all private funding of any election to take place. Take all the money out. You realize if that had to happen, and Max said, and I've said also, the left is making an enormous mistake if it puts all this energy in hating Trump instead of building a better world for what the last 24 years of presidencies have not done. And also, what about starting to demilitarize our forces around the world and close military bases and reducing the Pentagon budget by 80% and putting that money back into social services? And how about going after Monsanto and going after these chemical companies and ceasing gas hydrofracking and offshore drilling, and audit the Federal Reserve and close it down, and close down most of our government agencies or shrink them and allow oversight by people who have experience in overseeing these different agencies, and banning lobbying from all state and federal offices and revoking Citizens United and creating universal health care and creating a national health prevention program. So those are some things that I believe, Candace, if you supported, A, you would be rejected by the Republican and conservative community you now support, but at least you would be on the right side of what is humanistic, spiritual, and the future. So I hope you take this not as an assault or attack on you, but rather on the positions that you're supporting in this utterly corrupt administration and, without question, the worst president in history. Now, let's say hello to Daryl from New York. Hi, Daryl. Your turn.
Gary, thank you so much for the work that you do. With regard to Ms. Owens, her reaction is typical of one who has been betrayed. First of all, she's portraying Barack Obama and the Democratic Party as being left. They are not. Even Bernie Sanders isn't left, as you speak about when you talk about his positions on his foreign policy. So, first of all, what's required is a mass education of the population about their fears and how to move through them so that they can actually listen to one another and find out how much common ground they actually have. The things that you speak about, the health care, not hospitalization, not insurance, but health care. Just getting people to understand, A, what health care is, B, why they need it, C, the most important thing is the psychological rewiring that's required in order for people to do almost anything that makes sense. I don't see Americans working in their best interest. And what's really interesting is how the media, i.e. taking Governor Cuomo's statement that America isn't great, was taken as a gaffe when he listed all the reasons why America isn't great. And the reason it's not great and has never been great is because it steals land, it steals labor, both black, white, yellow, red, doesn't matter. The corporates, what is it now, maybe 100,000, they don't care. And what we need to do is move outside the systems, implement some of this, I would say all of the things that you suggest on your website, and then perhaps we can start beginning to relate to one another without this false sense of capitalism getting away. What Ms. Owens isn't understanding is that she's capital. Her people have always been capital in this country. And we were the country, if you regard capitalism as being the country. So she talks about history. She doesn't know her history, and therefore we need to help her. We need to first open up her mind using some techniques that are available, and then through that, with an open mind, we can begin to love one another if we begin to love ourselves.
You've made a couple very important points, Daryl, and I thank you for that. And here's one final message for Candace Owens. Candace, think for a moment. Just go to neutral, no political ideological processing, and ask yourself, if you're talking for and on behalf of many of the African Americans in this country, think of how many of them are exploited, since they're the largest part of our prison population, for drugs, who are exploited every day by major corporations, pay pennies to work on garments and all kinds. There's over 500 different industries that are making huge profits by exploiting prison labor. That's a new form of slavery. And African Americans are at the top of the list of being exploited again. And think of all the blacks that are in prison because they had a possession of a marijuana. And again, they're exploited and their families torn apart and their children taken from them. So shouldn't you also hear their stories and then compare that to the very administration that you support, the president you support, and see that he's not stopping this. He's contributing and compounding it. And I'm sure if you give yourself that clarion moment to take an honest look at what this administration, this president presents, you'll walk away. So my hope is, Candace, use your personality, use your determination, use that wise woman capacity to influence by walking away from the Republicans, this president, as you did walk away from the Democrats. They were corporate Democrats. Keep those conservative values that you think are important. And for others, keep your liberal values that you find important and evolve into the whole complete human beings instead of just political puppets that these people can manipulate. Daryl, thank you very much. I appreciate your... I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.